The impeachment trial of President Donald Trump continued in the U.S. Senate today with opening arguments getting underway. That comes after senators debated into the early morning on what form the trial would take. The question of whether witnesses would be allowed, however, has yet to be determined. Lara Brown is an associate professor of political science and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Lara, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be on this evening.
Well, let's start with the rules. We had this party line vote after midnight, I think, on the rules for at least some of the trial. What are the key points, the key elements that the senators voted on?
Well, the biggest key sort of change and important concession that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made was that arguments for both sides could last 24 hours over 3 days rather than over two. And that obviously was important because what it meant was they didn't have to schedule or do their argumentation, you know, at the odd hours of the night. That, in fact, even though things would likely go late every day, they wouldn't be sort of arguing their case at 2 and 3 in the morning.
One big decision that's left undecided, it looks like, is this whole witnesses and documents question. The idea that we're going to bring in more stuff than was in the House impeachment process. That hasn't been shot down completely, but it sounds like it's been postponed until after these early arguments. What are you watching for there?
Well, that's right. I mean, really what's going on is both sides are going to lay out the case, and then there will be this discussion or potential votes in favor of or against the bringing in of additional evidence, which includes witness testimony. Now, of course, the witness testimony may be required to also have a subpoena, and there is a conversation about the fact that witnesses would have to be deposed before they could actually come and testify. All of that conversation has been essentially postponed for the near future. And I do think the Democrats are hoping that there will be four senators who kind of cross the aisle and side with them. But I don't think anyone should hold their breath. There were 12 votes last night, 11 on amendments and 1 on the organizing rules. And the parties were essentially lockstep with one another. All the Republicans sided with Majority Leader McConnell in those votes.
And if I have this right, Lara, now we're at the stage where each side is going to present its case. We're going to get 3 days of the Democrats and then 3 days of the president's side. Do I have that right?
That is the way that I understand this is laying out, yes.
All right, the Democrats got started today. I want to give a listen to Democrat Adam Schiff coming over from the House to lead this off. Here's a listen to part of the basic case he's making.
He does not, under our laws and under our Constitution, have a right to use the powers of his office to corruptly solicit foreign aid, prohibited foreign aid in his reelection. He does not.
Talk about the basic case that Schiff and the other Democrats are laying out here.
Well, so today is really Adam Schiff is describing what happened, right? So the phone call with President Zelensky, the solicitation for investigations into both Joe Biden and his son's relationship with the company Burisma, and then also a conversation about whether Ukraine, you know, has some servers that they are still looking for with regard to the 2016 campaign, which, you know, fall in the lines of some conspiracy theories that Ukraine was actually the ones meddling in 2016, not Russia. That has been factually shown to be a false conspiracy theory. So that discussion is basically being laid out. Along with that is the additional chronology and timeline that describes the president's actions with regard to withholding and holding up the military aid that was supposed to go to Ukraine, and also kind of the communications between all of the people related to the military aid and how those conversations took place over the timeline that this kind of burgeoning scandal came to be.
Talking to Laura Brown from George Washington University with the latest on the impeachment trial in the Senate. Part of the case is establishing what Democrats say the president did here. The other part is saying it's impeachable. I want to give another listen to Representative Schiff talking about that.
You will hear the president's lawyers make the astounding claim that you can't impeach a president for abusing the powers of his office. Because they can't seriously contest that that is exactly what he did.
And that raises the constitutional question of what you can impeach a president for. The argument has been made by the president's defenders that abuse of power is a vague claim that doesn't match up with the constitutional articles that relate to impeachment. What do you make of that argument?
It's just false. The reality is that impeachment and high crimes and misdemeanors has long had in English common law and was true at the time of the founding, an understanding that political offenses, not meaning policy offenses, but that essentially, as I think Justice Joseph Story wrote, sort of gross neglect or usurpation or a habitual disregard for the public interest in discharging the duties of a political office, that those are very much impeachable offenses. So abuse of the power that goes with the executive is precisely the kind of political offense that high crimes and misdemeanors refers to.
Getting back now to the issue of witnesses and documents, let's look at the document issue here. The White House has not shared a lot, apparently. What do you make of the debate over whether the Senate should be seeking more documents related to these charges from the White House?
Well, the White House has essentially claimed this very broad, what they're calling executive immunity, meaning they don't have to turn over any documents. They don't have to agree to any witnesses. That is not sort of the precedent in these past trials and in past impeachments, whereby individuals went forward and testified, and then on specific issues, they may have claimed executive privilege, meaning that there are some areas, and the law does recognize that the president is entitled to have some level of privacy and secrecy with his advisors, but the law also recognizes that that secrecy cannot be used to essentially cover up wrongdoing. So one of the problems here is that there hasn't even been enough production of documents or witnesses to even get at any sense of whether or not the wrongdoing was specifically directed by all of the people in the president's orbit. I mean, we have heard testimony. There have been documents that have been produced from Freedom of Information Act requests, from public reporting, from those who voluntarily testified in the Senate. But out of all of those requests for the really, you know, high-level relevant political appointees from, you know, John Bolton to Mick Mulvaney, there has been no production, no willingness to move forward.
You mentioned former National Security Advisor John Bolton. President Trump, not a direct part of this U.S. Senate trial right now, but he's been tweeting about it and talking about it. He had this to say today when he was asked about the possibility of Bolton testifying.
The problem with John is that it's a national security problem. You know, you can't have somebody who's at national security. And if you think about it, John, he knows some of my thoughts. He knows what I think about leaders. What happens if he reveals what I think about a certain leader and it's not very positive and that I have to deal on behalf of the country? It's going to be very hard. It's going to make the job very hard. He knows other things. And I don't know if we left on the best of the terms. I would say probably not, you know. And so you don't like people testifying when they didn't leave on good terms, and that was due to me, not due to him. And so we'll see what happens.
Is there an argument there that John Bolton shouldn't be testifying, or at least not publicly testifying, over those national security concerns that the president raised?
No, because I don't think that, former ambassador, former national security advisor Bolton would put himself in a position where he would reveal national security sort of related information. I mean, the information that the Congress is seeking is related to these specific incidents, and were things to be classified, there would always be the ability for him to request essentially that they go into a secure session, as they did with other advisors. I mean, you can think back to some of the other individuals who testified, whether it was Vindman or Hill. There was time for and a provision made for essentially private conversations or private testimony to accompany the public testimony that they gave.
We're talking to Laura Brown, director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, looking at day two of the Senate impeachment trial. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched or listened to any of the impeachment trials so far? What stuck out to you? Do you think that witnesses should be allowed in the trial? Should the Senate seek more witnesses, people who didn't testify in front of the House? Should the White House allow high-level officials to come to the Senate if the Senate wants them? How about those documents that our guest was talking about? What would constitute a fair process for you, whatever side of this issue you're on? If you don't know what you want to see come out of this, what would decide this for you? What are you looking for? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Laura Brown of George Washington University about how the impeachment trial of President Trump is unfolding so far. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the Senate trial so far? Do you want to see witnesses allowed to testify? Who would you want to hear from? Or even if it's not public, who do you want senators to hear from? Do President Trump's actions related to Ukraine worry you? Do they warrant, you think, removal from office? What questions do you have about how this process is working? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, thank you. I think it's pretty much of a logical, simple question. Should we allow testimony, witnesses, or evidence in a trial? That's an obvious question with an obvious answer. And any time the Republicans bring up an opposition to that, it's just smokescreen. It's silly. There's absolutely no reason for this not to happen that way, because the witnesses were blocked from coming to the House. Evidence was not given over as subpoenaed or requested by the House. So we just have to continue this in the Senate.
Tom, thanks for the call. Laura, Tom's saying a trial without witnesses isn't really much of a trial.
Well, I think that's right. And this is where the majority of Americans, when they are asked this question by pollsters, you are seeing numbers like 2/3 of Americans believe there should be witnesses and documents turned over and that this should be a trial. I would agree that we are in a situation where the Republicans are either interested in kind of dismissing the case entirely, or conversely trying to run out the clock and just hope and wait that, you know, the election will determine sort of the president's fate. But I think that there is a much more serious issue here. And this is where, you know, I think most reasonable Americans say, look, if we're really going to get to the bottom of this, we need to understand what's happened, what is happening. Yes, you, the president, and the executive branch need to cooperate with this so that we can understand how high the sort of discussions went and how serious they are.
Thanks for that call. The president's legal team in their opening statement suggested that, hey, this could have happened. The House should have gone to the courts, challenged the president's claim of executive privilege, his block of people going to testify before them, let the courts sort out who had to testify, who didn't. That would have been the right way to do it. Is there something to that?
Well, I don't think they're wrong in the sense that in a perfect world, it would have been wonderful, I think, for the House to have taken that sort of tack, to have ensured that subpoenas were, in fact, that were ignored, were then sued over, and then the court decided. But this is where the House said, but we must take into account that this is part of the White House's legal strategy, which is to run out the clock, to use the courts as a way to delay a decision, and to delay is then to deny justice from happening. And I think there's a very interesting sort of reality where the House wanted to make sure that they held this president accountable because they felt that the evidence was strong enough with what they had, but it's not in a place where they could force the White House to do more because they did not have those court decisions to back them. So right now they are in a political perception game with regard to the Senate and the Senate being willing to hear the testimony and evidence.
Let's go back to your calls now. Joan is with us in Eau Claire. Joan, hi.
Good afternoon. The Republicans and Democrats, we're all elected to do a job. They're being paid to do a job, and they are allowing themselves to be circumvented by Mitch McConnell, who he demands their loyalty. There may be an implied threat over them that if they're not loyal to him with their votes, that he could make their elections very difficult. I think that Mitch McConnell should be relieved of his position. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks for the call. Laura, it's entirely possible that this thing will be split exactly along partisan lines. If you're a Republican, you think the president's completely innocent. If you're a Democrat, you think he should be removed from office.
Well, I do think that those are the sort of party lines that we are seeing. But the one thing I would say to your caller is you have to realize that the people who serve as majority leader or minority leader or even, you know, Speaker Pelosi in the House, they are essentially serving because their peers believe that they are the best leader for that position. So while it's easy to sort of put the blame onto Senator McConnell, you also need to take into account that the Republican senators that support him because he is helping them to make their life easier. And I know this sounds strange, but his concessions yesterday helped those moderate senators who were on the fence to be able to now say, look, the process is more fair. We're not holding hearings in the middle of the night. See, the majority leader listened to us. So there's a very interesting relationship where the leader is actually doing what the majority of their party, their what we call a caucus or a conference, really wants. They're not necessarily kind of out there in front without their peers behind them.
Time for one more caller. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Thank you. Yeah, you cannot deny that the Democrats absolutely hate Trump and have ever since the beginning. They feel like the election was stolen from them. So having that fact behind you, even if I assume as a voter myself, even if I give the Democrats the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, they're correct, they're totally correct, whatever, I still think a statesman, elected representative, should say, look, let's let the American people decide this in the next election. What Trump did, according to the Democrats, in my opinion, is still not a high crime or misdemeanor.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Laura, the idea that, hey, let's let the voters decide in, 10 months now?
So, two thoughts. I mean, I completely can understand and hear what your caller is saying about the importance of the election. But it's also true that the framers put the impeachment power into the Constitution because there was a recognition that there might be bad actors in political office, that when actors in political office abuse their power or make bad decisions, there should be remedies to get them out of office if it is in between elections. So that is nothing new. I'm somebody who did a dissertation on congressional scandals, so I can regale you with lots of congressional wrongdoing if you want to talk about misbehavior in between election terms. And that's where this impeachment comes in. When it comes to President Trump, certainly I would say listen to the Democrats' argument about what actually historically constitutes a high crime and misdemeanor, and then how that relates to President Trump. That is coming over the next 2 days. But what I would say in relation to that is, in fact, it is illegal, according to the Federal Election Commission, to solicit foreign help for a campaign. So that is an out-and-out illegality that is written into federal election law. And it is true that you could make an argument that what Trump was doing on his call with President Zelensky was not election help. But I also think that that strains a lot of credulity to believe that he was asking about Biden or that he was asking about the Clinton server for public interest reasons.
We'll have to leave it there for now. Lara, thanks for joining us. That's Lara Brown, Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of the Graduate School of Public Management at George Washington University, looking at the latest developments in the impeachment trial.